Welcome, welcome. And we have a familiar face with us today. I think this is his fourth time on here, third or fourth, on Trevilian Next. And super, super happy to have Patrick Sells and I take back. Welcome, Patrick. Good to see you.
Thanks, Keith. It's fun to be back on together. And I think you're right. It has been four times. It's amazing.
Yeah, you were our actual, we were talking about this the other day. You were actually our first content video. You, Rom, who is now at NYDIG, Rom McDaniel, he was at Q2 at the time. And we had Jill Castilla and Jason Hendricks. And it was almost 2 years ago because the pandemic shut everything down and we had to kind of find a new avenue to get out there. But it seems like yesterday. But since then, obviously, you've moved on to NYDIG for Quantic. And we spoke about 18 months ago now. It was January 2021. You and Yen. And you had just started your journey at NYDIG.
I was about a month into the job.
Yeah, a month into the job. You were well-rested. You were ready to go. It was right after the holidays, I remember. And since then, just to name a few partnerships, Alchemy, Allied Payment Networks, CSI, FIS, Fiserv, Jack Henry, NCR, Q2. I'm probably missing a few in there. But let's just start with kind of what you've learned since our last talk. 18 months ago, specifically, you know, in regards to Bitcoin and community banks, customers, you know, what have you learned out there?
You know, it's been a very fun and an exciting, interesting journey for 18 months. I've probably gotten to talk to close to 1,000 community banks or credit unions, banks about crypto. And, you know, those conversations evolved so much over the 18 months as I kind of watched, it felt like the industry come to a different understanding. You know, when first started having the conversation, there was probably someone at most banks, you know, that had some level of interest in crypto, but it was not really a topic that was okay to talk about at the bank, you know, too much. But as NYDIG started having more conversations with banks, you know, one of the things that was very informative or helpful was we would ask, you know, the other members of the executive team, you know, go ask your kids or go ask your, you know, your friends and see if they own crypto, even if you don't. And as people started having more of those conversations, realizing, wow, there are a lot of people that have crypto. And I think, you know, the executive order Biden put out in February really captured that. I think, you know, a lot of data suggests even higher, but the White House said 16% of Americans have crypto. You know, it's really quite pervasive. But one of the things that we had seen in our market research was not just that people, you know, a lot of people had crypto, but that people really wanted their banks to play the leading role when it came to crypto. In particular, those who had never bought it before. The majority of Americans who hadn't bought crypto, it wasn't because they didn't want Bitcoin. It's that they weren't comfortable with how they could access it. In other words, it was an access issue, not a Bitcoin issue. And the way they felt comfortable accessing it is through their banks. And so now as I think about where we are, one of the more exciting things for me or rewarding things is every time a bank goes live, they hear from customers and employees, I bought Bitcoin for the first time because I finally feel safe. And it was so easy. And so I think just watching one theme I would say over the last 18 months has just been the realization amongst the banking community, crypto's here to stay. It's not this thing that's trying to disrupt banks. In fact, banks get to play a leading role here. And it's something exciting for many banks to feel like they're back on the forefront of innovation. You know, with the rise of fintech of the last decade, there was very much the sense that like banks, I think those inside the industry felt like we weren't innovative. And now here are some where banks are really at the forefront of bringing to the to consumers in America. And so a lot of fun for, I think, the banking community.
Yeah, it's great to hear. And that was kind of the mission. And you see it on your website, Bitcoin for All. And then you saw the Super Bowl this year. It was just crypto.com, FTX, everything was. And I think, I'm speaking for myself here. I would feel more comfortable going through, because I don't want to be a trader of Bitcoin. Right. There's a lot of traders out there. I'd rather, you know, have access to it, see to my bank account. So that must be great to see. You know, we specialize in talent, obviously. We've helped NYDIG and a great partner. when it comes to skill sets and kind of roles within community banks, but also, you know, other fintechs, what's going to be crucial, not only for partnering with NYDIG, but being successful too, and making sure it's a product that is successful and customers are happy and they feel safe, you know, is it, and also as we move into, you know, the metaverse and blockchain, is it going to be more engineering at banks, product? What kind of feedback are you getting talent-wise from these executives at banks?
Yeah, and you know, thank you, Keith, and to the Trillion team for the help at NYDIG. I greatly appreciate that. I think I'm about to, you know, share some comments that are generalizations, definitely not true of every bank out there. But again, as I've gotten to talk to a lot of banks, you know, banks that are seen in the market as innovative, banks that are wanting to be innovative, banks that are trying to think, how do they go be innovative? And I think one of the things that has stood out to me that matters the most ultimately in terms of a bank's ability to actually be innovative, and innovative not just because they did one thing, but they actually have a culture of innovation, is tied to the risk officer. And I don't know how much, or the chief compliance officer. And I don't know that I necessarily fully appreciated that even when I was at Quantic. You know, I think probably for many banks, you thought, as did, you know, Quantic, like bring in a chief innovation officer or bring in a chief digital officer. And those are critical roles, and they do absolutely play an important role at banks. But the real difference is in that risk and compliance function. And in particular, what I've seen is where there are compliance oriented leaders who also have experience in technology, that makes all the difference, because so much of the innovation, as you know, and the industry knows, it's happening around technology. And if you can have a compliance officer who also has an interest in or a love of technology, they understand it so much better, and their ability to help the bank actually innovate. And so I think, you know, really encourage banks, and I see it happening, it's trying to find innovative, technology-oriented risk and compliance people to round out their teams.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I was just telling you before this recording, a lot of our searches over the last 6 months have been high-level risk and compliance at BaaS banks.
Yeah.
So BankProv, you know pretty well, helped place their SVP at risk. And the main ask was somebody who's agile, somebody who understands technology now, but also can understand it going forward.
Yeah.
And somebody who's very curious, curious about technology. So, and that's hard to find. I mean, somebody who understands the risk of regulations and also is curious about technology and crypto.
Yeah. So, you know, a piece of advice I've given a couple of banks who have, you know, been having these kinds of conversations with, is it probably is really hard to find a compliance risk officer who also, you know, knows technology or has a background in technology. My kind of advice has been find someone who has a personal love of technology, right?
Exactly.
That's gonna be easier. And then the other thing is you can add someone to the compliance or risk team who is maybe younger in their career, but interested in, you know, technology, and let them feel part of the risk and compliance team, and let them influence then their colleagues and peers as another way of trying to skin that cat.
Oh yeah. If you have a love and an interest in it, it makes it worthwhile kind of dealing with all those regulations and trying to figure out which avenue to go. That's great advice, Patrick, because we want this to be successful, not just at launch with NYDIG, but also going forward. And you need somebody at the bank that, you know, is not going to give up on it if something happens. Speaking of risk and compliance, you know, we hear a lot from Washington, a lot on the news. Regulations, kind of, that's always, you know, a big thing in banking, as you know. Is anything out there that you want to talk about, since you're in the trenches every day, about that, that you can enlighten us with on this broadcast?
You know, my people would ask me that question, you know, late last year, early on this winter. And the way I would answer it is my sense from the regulators was one, a recognition that blockchain and Bitcoin are here to stay. And that's so important that they wanted American companies to lead innovation here, not exactly. just like we did with the internet. I think there was also, though, a recognition that for American companies to lead innovation here, real companies, there needed to be clear regulations. Mm-hmm. Because that's what will give confidence to companies and investors. And that there is also a recognition that a lot of things happening in the crypto ecosystem were probably mm-hmm. being done illegally. And so needed to, how do you stop the illegal stuff quickly, but mm-hmm. not to where it has an adverse, massively negative impact on a lot of consumers' lives who have money now in crypto. And so wanting to kind of find that right met pace to slow things down, but then create clarity for real growth. And I feel like, you know, when Biden's executive order came out, that's really the heart of what he was trying to get at. And his request to the regulators of, hey, everyone has probably started developing some type of patchwork, but now we need to bring that together in a comprehensive mesh. And so since that's happened, you know, Philip, you know, very much so that every regulatory body at the state and national mm-hmm. level are increasing the amount of people they have working in crypto. They're interacting with other agencies more and more to figure out, you know, who does I stop here and you start there. Mm-hmm. And all of that's, you know, really positive. I think, you know, in fairness, since the EO, there's been so much attention and energy that, you know, the regulators in their attempt to bring together a framework are moving sometimes a little too quickly and making it hard to say, well, you said don't cross this line, but this other person said don't cross that line. And now, like, no one can cross any line. And that's not a criticism of the regulators in any way. It's just a recognition that this is complicated and there is an entire thriving ecosystem of people moving. And as we're trying to work through all of that, how does that happen? You know, more specifically to banking for this audience, right now there's really kind of three things out there from a regulatory perspective. If you're OCC chartered, they put out Bulletin 1179 that requires a non-objection for a certain crypto activity. There's a lot of things in 1179, but at the heart of what it is if you're going to be custodying the cryptographic keys yourself or hosting a wallet. And so if you're doing those types of activity, definitely the OCC wants to know about it before you can go forward. If you're working, though, with a company like NYDIG using your finder's authority, that's not something that's called out in 1179. So there's not a question to need to have to go get approval in order to work like that. Similar, if you're a state chartered but Fed member bank, the Fed also, they have not put out guidance yet like 1179, but very much are wanting to be aware of what their banks are doing. And then the FDIC about a month ago put out a notice that said, if you're doing anything with crypto in any way, including the finder's authority, to go talk to the FDIC. And so depending on kind of where you are from a primary federal regulator, you know, there's different levels of, hey, I can easily go do some things to, I'm mm-hmm. going to have a conversation about anything. And mm-hmm. by nature, that would just slow it down. But again, I think the intent behind it is not to stop innovation here. It's just to make sure that it's being done in a safe and sound way.
Yeah, no, there's so much happening right now. And if I gathered anything from what you just said, call NYDIG and your bank. They'll help you on that journey, that's for sure. So yeah, one last question, Patrick. I know you're a busy person. So yeah, NYDIG has, you know, exploded. We heard the news months ago about, you know, $1 billion with a B in funding, $7 billion valuation. You must be, you know, on such a journey right now. It's fantastic. What's next kind of for NYDIG, you know, to finish out 2022, second half of 2022, heading into 2023? What are like some of the main goals for you and your team?
Yeah, you know, not absolutely blessed with the investors that we have in NYDIG, from partners like Westcap to the FIS Fiservs of the world and more. It's just great, great investor base. And, you know, the growth that we experienced last year is a testament to the NYDIG team and just across the board, the talent that is represented here. As we think about, you know, at least in the world of banking, I really look at 2021 as laying the foundation for bringing Bitcoin to banks. You know, as we announced partnerships with the core providers and the front end providers, you know, that was a lot of the news last year, but it, you know, it takes 3, 6, 9, 12 months to get the integrations done between us and them. When I think about 2022, it's really about the activation of that foundation. And as each of those partners are able to take FIs live, working with them to do that, you know, last year was historic for us in many ways in terms of being able to get as many deals done at the infrastructure level as I think probably any fintech has. This year, the challenge is how do you implement and install more banks than probably any time in history in a year. Trying to take, you know, 500 FIs live is going to be quite a challenge, but it's also fun, you know, and I think when the year is done, going to be able to really say like Bitcoin and banking actually happened and is real when that many banks and credit unions have it available.
Yeah. And it's such a great mission, man, because, you know, same here, we want these banks, smaller banks, credit unions to compete in the digital age and thrive against, the big boys in New York, the Bank of America's and JP Morgan Chase's. But I feel, you know, I feel a lot of momentum in the industry from BaaS banking, fintech partnerships, blockchain, and of course, NYDIG and Bitcoin. I feel really good about, you know, arming these banks with new technology to compete. So it's a fantastic mission. Well, always great time, Patrick. We'll have you on for your fifth recording sometime later this year. But hope to see you soon at a conference or up in New York, and safe travels, my friend, and talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you, Keith. Appreciate it, man.